Welcome to the podcast of the Student Christian Movement. SCM is a community of students, past and present, and it is community that is at the heart of who we are and how we do things. Based in the UK, our vision of SCM is as a generous community, expressing a lived faith in Jesus Christ where social action meets prayerful devotion. We seek to be both a radical voice for equality and justice, and a safe home for progressive Christian students. Hello, before we get into today's episode, I need to give a little disclaimer. This episode is with Chris from the Young Christian Climate Network, but on Friday last week, after we had recorded this episode the previous week, the Young Christian Climate Network posted this on Twitter. We've reached the end of a chapter. After our wonderful in-person day and general meeting on Saturday, we're announcing the bittersweet news that as a network we've voted to close and go into hibernation. We simply don't have anyone able to take the lead currently, so we've decided to simply be Young Christian Climate Friends until such a time as someone expresses an interest in picking things up again. Is that you? Get in touch by emailing hello.yccn@gmail.com to let us know. So if you are interested in seeing the work of YCCN continue after hearing this podcast episode, then please do make sure that you contact the email that I've just mentioned, and I will leave a note of this in the show notes. But in the meantime, we hope that you enjoy this episode with Chris Manctolo from the Young Christian Climate Network.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to the SCM podcast. Today, I am excited to be joined by Chris Manctolo from the Young Christian Climate Network. So thanks for coming on today, Chris.
Yeah, thank you too. It's great to meet you.
I'm very excited about this conversation to speak a little bit about Christian climate activism and how it relates to Bonhoeffer and some of the really exciting projects and campaigns that you've been involved in. But to start with, for those who don't know you, do you want to tell us a little about yourself and your involvement with YCCN?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Chris, and I got involved with the Young Christian Climate Network about 3 years ago. At the time, I was down in Exeter, Exeter University, and I was working on a PhD in the geography department there. One day I was writing it up, and I got distracted basically and started looking at things on Twitter, and I saw this new group of Christians who'd got together called the Young Christian Climate Network. And they were thinking about doing some kind of campaigning around climate justice and that kind of thing. So I signed up and then forgot about it for about 6 months. And then someone else contacted me and were like, they told me, do you still want to be involved in this? And I was like, yes. And then they said, oh, we're doing this, we're organizing this pilgrimage to the UN climate summit in Glasgow, COP26. This was back in 2021. I was like, sure, that sounds cool. And then I kind of took over my life a bit, but in a very good way. And I ended up kind of being the press officer for that and doing all sorts of things and meeting all sorts of wonderful people. And I guess I've been involved in doing things linked to that ever since, over the last few years.
That's great. And for many of us who are Christian, it's fairly clear as to why our faith would motivate us to take part in climate activism. But for others, it might not be as clear as to why there is that connection there. So why does your faith motivate you when it comes to taking action on climate change?
For me, there are two really big motivations. The first is that we believe as Christians that God created the universe. God made all the stars and this wonderful planet and all the creatures, and it shows God's glory and wisdom and kindness. And if God is the creator and has created this world and has also made us to look after it, then we probably should be doing that. And burning fossil fuels and heating up the planet isn't a very good way of looking after it. So that's one motivation. Another thing is around justice. So climate change is very unfair. Most carbon emissions are emitted by wealthy countries in the West, like the UK and America and other places like that. And the people that are doing the least to cause the problem, who kind of live in the global South, are not, you know, emitting lots of carbon emissions, but they're the ones who at the moment who are suffering some of the worst effects of climate change. And so it's very unfair. And as Christians, we believe that God is just, that God is a father to the fatherless and wants to set free people who are being, you know, affected by, you know, bad things. And so if we believe that God is a God of justice and that God asks us to act justly and love mercy and to walk humbly with the Lord, then we probably should be, you know, campaigning for a more just world and doing something to stop climate change.
Yeah, and one of the ways in the West, I suppose, that people become desensitized to the whole topic of climate change is the ways in which emissions are so detached from our day-to-day life that when we look at things that, say, for example, in a city like Glasgow, where there's the lowest levels of car ownership in the UK, right, their day-to-day life, and thinking, I get the train every day, I'm taking public transport, I'm doing all of these things, without realizing potentially that their pensions are actually contributing towards funding big oil and gas companies and new oil and gas projects. So that links into some of the campaigns that you've been a part of. One of those was the protest that took place at the Lambeth Conference in 2022 and the campaign for the Church of England to divest from fossil fuels. So could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so an important thing to say is that people have been campaigning for this for a long time now. So Christian Climate Action, which is the group of Christians that eventually became part of Extinction Rebellion, and also a charity called Operation Noah, have been campaigning for over 10 years now to try and get the Church of England and other big churches in the UK to divest from fossil fuels. So to move the money that they're investing in fossil fuel companies into other things. And we got involved with this as YCCN in about April 2022. We knew that the Lambeth Conference was coming up, and this happens every sort of 10 years within the Anglican Communion, and bishops from Anglican churches all around the world come to meet up in London to talk about, you know, the big issues of the day, one of which is, you know, climate change. And we thought that it'd be good to kind of get people thinking about this ahead of that, particularly church leaders. And so we organized like a vigil outside of Church House in London, and, you know, to draw attention to that. And then at the actual Lambeth Conference, we got lots of churches from around the UK to write prayers on a hand that they'd kind of cut out of paper and decorated to kind of symbolise fellowship with people who are Christians in the global South who are getting affected more by climate change at the moment. Yeah, we held a big kind of banner with all of these like prayer hands outside the Lambeth Palace, and were able to talk to some of the bishops. And yeah, so that's what we did, basically.
Yeah, that's good. And how is the campaign going for divestment from fossil fuels in the Church of England? Are we at the stage where there has been divestment? Is it still to go ahead?
Yeah, so that's actually a really good news story, actually. So nothing happened at the Lambeth Conference in terms of divestment. They started, this is a tangent, but they started something called the Anglican Communion Forest, which is all about encouraging tree planting in different countries around the world by Anglican churches, which was good, but they didn't say anything about divesting fossil fuels. So a few months ago, I was in actually a meeting with people deciding on, you know, well, how are we going to try and persuade the Church of England in the UK, at least, to, you know, divest from fossil fuels, and what we're going to say when they meet at General Synod, which is like a annual kind of meeting of bishops in the UK and other people. And then a couple of days later, to our great surprise, the national kind of investing bodies of the Church of England, so the Church of England Pensions Board, so, you know, that pays the pensions of all the clergy in the Church of England, and the church commissioners, because the Church of England owns a lot of land, they suddenly announced they were going to divest from fossil fuels, which was, yeah, a real answer to prayer and really cool. So
it's great news to hear that. You already mentioned that one of the first ways that you came into contact with YCCN was through the pilgrimage to COP26, which was in my home city of Glasgow. I know that for me personally, I was very happy to see lots of faith-based and interfaith events that were going on at the time, with churches hosting fringe events for it, and for kind of non-mainstream, more definitely activist type events that were going on in those places. There were a couple of negative things that came up from Christians. I know that there was one church that specifically said that what the world needs is Christ crucified, not more of that being preached rather than a discussion of climate change. But in general, the activism on the part of Christians was very positive to see. I took part in the faith block and the large march that happened on the Saturday. But could you tell us a little bit about your own experience of COP26?
So, as I said earlier, I was part of organising this pilgrimage to COP26. And I think in the end, about 2,500 people of faith and of no faith ended up taking part of it in this. It became this really big thing. And because of that, some of us ended up getting invited to be observers at the United Nations conference, which was amazing because we weren't just able to go on the march. We were able to actually get access to what's called the Blue Zone, which is the kind of secure area in these conferences where all of the politicians and the journalists kind of meet and talk about things and make the decisions that are made at these conferences. And yeah, I found the whole thing both inspirational and also kind of pretty heartbreaking at the same time. It was inspirational meeting some of the different activists and people of different faiths from around the world who were, you know, campaigning for justice and for a more sustainable future. All sorts of people. I met people doing kind of tree planting in Zimbabwe. I met, you know, indigenous peoples, people from those groups of people who were, you know, doing really amazing things. But at the same time, being inside the Blue Zone, I found quite a depressing experience. I think before I went there, I was maybe a bit naive in that I thought that politicians and might vaguely act on our best interests. And I'm afraid that's not always the case. I remember this was really strange. In the conference venue, it was hard to get like a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. It's really expensive, as it is with all these things. There are lots of kind of pavilions where the different countries show what they're doing when it comes to climate action. Australia and Brazil had very big pavilions. and they were giving out free coffee to everyone to kind of get people to go visit their pavilions. But when you actually looked at who was like sponsoring the pavilions, it was all their kind of oil and gas companies. So it was like a really weird kind of like coffee diplomacy, trying to kind of greenwash kind of things, even through, you know, giving people like free coffee, which was bizarre. And, you know, you'd see, you know, lobbyists there talking to people and stuff like that. So that was not good. But, you know, seeing what people were doing on the streets and, you know, what the different activists were doing was really cool. So, yeah.
We hope you are enjoying the podcast so far. At SCM, we are passionate about equipping the church with the resources needed to make it a more welcoming and inclusive space, especially for LGBTQ plus people. Recently, alongside One Body, One Faith, we have published a resource for churches who want to take a step further along the journey of LGBTQ plus allyship. This resource is called How to Be a Good Christian Ally and is the first in a series called Affirming Christianity. Rather than debating biblical verses that cause disagreement, this short course seeks to offer ways to explore the idea of allyship in the Bible and as a church, as well as to learn from LGBTQ plus stories. You can purchase a resource available for small group discussions at movement.org.uk in our resources section. Yeah, I know that for me it was really depressing to see that there were more oil and gas representatives that were in that blue zone that you described than there were Indigenous peoples representatives or other activist groups. It was very sad to see, but and it's remained the case like going forward into COP27 and beyond too. Sadly, there is a big group of oil and gas companies which are represented at these events to defend their interests. You've already mentioned a little bit of why your faith motivates you to take these type of actions, whether that's the protest at Lambeth Conference or taking part in the pilgrimage to COP26. But beyond the motivations, why do you think it's important for Christians to actually take action? Because there might be some people listening to this podcast today who agree broadly with you when it comes to the ideas of why we should be for stopping climate change, why we should be for lowering our usage of oil and gas. But when it comes to actually taking action on these things, whether that's through protest or writing to MPs or direct non-violent action, why do you think it's important for people of faith to take those actions?
Sure. Well, the first thing I'd say is that doing nothing is an action. It's just deciding not to act, and that has, you know, an effect on what's going to happen in the future. So you might as well choose to act in a positive way. But I think throughout the Bible, you see there's always a connection between faith and action. So, like, I don't know if you think about like some of the prophets saying, you know what they say, things like, you know, what does the Lord, you know, ask of us, to act justly, love mercy, and to walk humbly with the Lord. So there's a call to action there, to act justly and to love mercy. And there's also like a belief part of it as well, you know, to walk humbly with the Lord. And there are all sorts of, you know, places where it says kind of things like that. And I think you see that in Jesus' own life too. And I think if we're taking what Jesus says seriously, then we should be people who act.
Definitely. I would totally agree with that. Part of my role at SCM as a faith and action worker is to bring forth these discussions in this podcast season. And this season in particular is focused on the life and theology of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. So I would be interested to hear a little bit of how Bonhoeffer's influenced your faith and how has his life and theology inspired you?
Sure. So I just came across Bonhoeffer out of curiosity, when I first heard about who he was and his life, I was like, wow, this guy sounds like a cool guy. And then I have read some of his books. I read, Discipleship and, The Cost of Discipleship, as it's called in English, and some of it, read some of the other stuff, learned a bit about his life. So I'm not, an expert on his theology, but I find him very inspiring, in that he really kind of held together an active, kind of committed faith as a Christian, but also, chose to act, chose to, to speak out against injustice and to do what was right. And I think he was very brave.
Definitely. And I think you see that in the quote that he gives about we're not only to bandage the wounds of those who are like wounded under the wheels of injustice, but to put a spoke in the wheel itself. And it's very relevant to the discussion of climate change when there's talk of loss and damage funds, which is really, in a way, is just trying to heal the wounds, but not dealing directly with injustice. And it's a necessary part of it. But really, there needs to be an acknowledgement of the ways in which Western countries have had that disproportionate impact that you've already mentioned, to increase the amount that's going into loss and damage funds, and to begin to reverse a lot of the individualization of culture and things which have led to this climate crisis. But one of Bonhoeffer's other key ideas was this concept of the Christus Wirklicht, or Christ's reality. So in Bonhoeffer's view, there is one reality with no division between secular and sacred. And rather, as Christians, we're invited to encounter Christ in the concrete and real situations that we face in the world. So when you're thinking about that sort of concept, what implications do you think that type of thinking could have for Christian action on the climate crisis today?
So I was thinking about this before a podcast, and I think sometimes, and particularly within, the evangelical churches that I worship in, and well, work in as well, because I'm a ministry assistant at a church at the moment. Sometimes there can be this idea that there's kind of that spiritual things are the most important things. So, prayer or going to church or doing evangelism or whatever that might be, and then that other stuff that goes on, secular kind of things, going to work, politics, art, all of this stuff, this is not doesn't have that much to do with faith. But if Christ is Lord of all, then all of this is, surely kind of relevant. And sometimes I think as well that means you end up seeing God at work in places where you don't really expect it. To give one example from the activism that I've been involved with, there was one day where I spoke to some people who were involved in the Stop Rosebank campaign. Rosebank is a big oil field in the North Sea that the government has decided that it wants to open up. And this was last year. I spoke to Lauren McDonald and a couple of other people, and was like, why don't we do a vigil outside of the Norwegian embassy? This wasn't with Christians. Lauren's not a Christian. There were some people from Humanist Climate Action there as well. So I left early from the Bible college that I go to on a Tuesday to go to the Norwegian embassy, and we spent some time in silence and lit some kind of candles. Some people prayed, some people spent some time in silent reflection. And it was really interesting because we had some really interesting conversations about faith and its relevance to taking action when it comes to the climate crisis. And there was something very powerful about that. And I saw people on social media afterwards saying, this is really cool. It's not where you'd expect kind of like God to necessarily be at work, but I think God was. So there you go.
Definitely. That's great. Well, if people are wanting to connect with YCCN and some of the work that they're doing or to support them, where can they connect with them?
Yeah, so you can see what we've done on our website. And I guess you can email us at hello@yccn.uk. But yeah, it doesn't you don't have to support YCCN as well. There's plenty of other kind of people, groups that are doing great stuff as well. So, you know, YCCN or anything else, yeah, get stuck in.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, Chris, thank you so much for the conversation today. I've really enjoyed it.
We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. As always, you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Student Christian Movement or on X at SCM_Britain. Also, on the 6th of December at 6 p.m, we have an event with the Ecumenical Accompaniment Programme in Palestine and Israel. This event is part of our Human Rights Week programme, and we will be joined by Lucy, who will be discussing EAPPI's work in Israel and Palestine. You can register for this event on the events section of our website. We hope you can join us.